Israel's leaders are working this week to make sure the world does not forget the horror of the attacks on Israeli civilians, including elderly people and children.
Wounded Palestinians rush to medical care as the death toll climbs in the Gaza Strip after 2 weeks of unrelenting war.
We'll examine how the war in Israel is affecting the entire Middle East region.
So I don't think the negotiations will amount to much, except maybe keep external actors out of it and try to limit the war aims that Israel has by going into Gaza Strip.
And the kidnapping of civilians by Hamas is taking a heavy toll on the families and friends of the victims who want answers. Join us on the Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. Hello, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. President Joe Biden made a direct appeal to the American people to continue funding Ukraine and Israel amid their war efforts in an Oval Office address Thursday evening, a day after returning from Tel Aviv to show support for Washington's key ally. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Whitaker-Zwara reports.
Displaced Palestinians sheltering in tents in southern Gaza as Israel continues its airstrikes, including one that turned this mosque in the central Gaza town of Deir al-Balah into rubble. This is the backdrop for President Joe Biden's remarks Thursday evening, fresh off his visit to Tel Aviv, as he asked for more funding for Israel, a key U.S. ally, as well as to support Ukraine against the Russian invasion.
Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy.
Israel has bombarded Gaza, killing 3,000 and displacing more than a million people, mostly Palestinian Arabs, in response to the militant group Hamas incursion on October 7th, which killed 1,400 people in retaliation for Israel's decades-long occupation. In supporting Israel, Biden said America must also keep its commitment to help Ukraine in its fight against Russia's invasion.
History has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos and death and more destruction.
Biden did not say how much he is requesting. The amount will be known Friday when presented to Congress. The House must have a speaker to pass legislation. So far, no Republican has been able to secure the 217 votes needed to claim the speaker's gavel, following the ousting of former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy earlier this month. Meanwhile, protesters calling for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas descended on the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday. An October 16 Reuters Ipsos poll shows that 41% says the U.S. should support Israel's position.
American leadership is what holds the world together. American alliances is what keep us, America, safe.
That argument will be viewed with skepticism. Massive, in some cases violent, anti-Israel and anti-U.S. demonstrations have erupted in various capitals around the world. Many protesters see Israel as an occupying force that continues to annex Palestinian territory, supported by the U.S., even as the administration denounces Russia's annexation of parts of Ukraine. Patsy Whitaker-Zwara, VOA News, Washington.
With international criticism mounting over the attacks in Gaza, Israel's leaders are working to make sure the world does not forget the horror of the attacks on Israeli civilians, including elderly people and children. As protests spread across the world this week, officials invited foreign journalists to visit the scenes of the carnage and get a firsthand look at forensics experts working to identify the disfigured remains of hundreds of victims. Jan Boychat was among them and reports from Tel Aviv.
Wounded Palestinians rushed to medical care as the death toll climbs in the Gaza Strip after 2 weeks of unrelenting war. At the same time, pressure on Israel is mounting, and across the Middle East, North Africa, and much of the world, protests have erupted, demanding an end to the violence. In Berlin, tensions boiled over as violent anti-Israel protests resulted in the arrest of 174 people. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, Israeli forces clashed with Palestinian demonstrators. The violence resulted in the deaths of several Palestinians. As international criticism intensifies, the humanitarian situation in Gaza deteriorates. But Israeli officials are determined to ensure the world does not forget the horrifying events of October 7, when Hamas militants launched a devastating attack on Israeli communities along the Gaza border, claiming the lives of 1,400 people.
This is the Israeli Forensic Institute, and behind me are people trying, working on the identification of bodies, people who were killed last Saturday. They already identified more than 500 people, but some of them, they say, some of the bodies are in such a bad condition that they won't be possible to be identified.
Journalists were granted access to the necropsy rooms where the remains of the victims are being examined. Burned bones are scattered around and doctors are painstakingly working to piece them together.
We're trying to figure out how many individuals could be included in this set of remains. And with this particular, what we found, a particular part of the mandible, the lower jaw, we found three of them. Each individual only has two. From that, we can say that in this case, there are at least two individuals included in these remains.
In southern Israel, near the Gaza Strip, journalists were also escorted through the Be'eri Kibbutz, one of the communities that where the scars of the October 7th massacre by Hamas militants remain fresh. The scenes of destruction and even the motorcycles and guns used by Hamas attackers seemed untouched. Israel received another important sign of international support after U.S. President Joe Biden's visit. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak arrived in Israel Thursday with promises of support and an offer to mediate a deal for humanitarian aid to flow into Gaza. But even as these diplomatic efforts were underway, Israeli warplanes continued to pound Gaza, with authorities in the enclave raising the death toll already in the thousands as each hour went by. Yam Boesha, VOA News, Tel Aviv.
For more insight on how the war in Israel is having an impact on the Middle East and the implications for the region if the fighting expands, I spoke with Craig Albert, professor of political science and graduate director, Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies at Augusta University in Augusta, Georgia.
It really depends on how bad the war gets, how full scale it could get, because right now you're looking at possibly a three front or even a four front war where you have Israel fighting against Hamas and Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip, fighting Hezbollah from Lebanon if they decide to enter the war fully. And indications seem like Hezbollah is preparing some offensive by moving some of their material, war material, to the border. So it looks like they might join. And then depending on what Iran does, if Iran fully escalates and decides to go to war against Israel, you're talking about something that we haven't seen in the Middle East for 50 years, a full-scale, just regional-wide, if not larger, war. Because if Iran enters, you have to predict that the United States is going to enter that war in some heavy capacity on the side of Israel.
And also, it remains to be seen, as you point out, how Hamas is going to react with this possible ground invasion of Gaza. But there are backers as well to Hamas, such as Lebanon's Hezbollah, and as you mentioned, Iran. So how fully escalated could this get?
Oh, this could be a full-scale, you know, multiple-front battle with land invasions, with force-on-force, full-scale infantry battles, artillery battles, things that we're seeing, not to the same scale unless Iran enters with Russia and Ukraine. But when we look at all the regional chess pieces at play, you have the Houthi rebels from Yemen firing at U.S. forces right now as well. That's what the U.S. is thinking, that some of these missiles are coming from, that they're shooting down. You have Iran and Syria fighting and firing drones and missiles at U.S. forces that are stationed in Iraq. So you're looking at some type of escalation where Israel and the United States are in some type of war that Israel and the United States has not seen in some time. So it has quite the possibility of becoming a huge problem, not just for the Middle East, but depending on what happens and how the United States and Iran plays, could lead to a global war.
Well, there have been some diplomatic efforts initiated by regional powers, including King Abdullah II of Jordan and President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt, international diplomatic stakeholders such as the U.S. They've begun discussions with Israeli and Palestinian actors. How beneficial have these meetings been?
I think they've been beneficial to the extent that they're starting to set up some type of corridors for at least some humanitarian assistance to be delivered to the Gaza Strip, kind of ease the suffering of the Palestinian civilians and citizens not involved in the combat. There is some talk of Hamas releasing the prisoners that they have right now if Israel can guarantee that they won't invade the Gaza Strip. I think that's past what Israel wants. I think Israel is going to invade, period, no matter what Hamas offers them. So I think that this was too big and too much of a catastrophic attack against Israel for Israel not to invade. So I don't think the negotiations will amount to much, except maybe keep external actors out of it and try to limit the war aims that Israel has by going into Gaza Strip. For instance, they pretty much have two war aims of possibilities. They can eliminate Hamas functionally, meaning they get rid of every Hamas member. They pretty much go through and just eradicate the Gaza Strip holdings where Hamas are located through air, land, and sea. Or they can target limitedly and only hit high-value targets, send in their special forces elements, and just take out as many as they can in low-scale, low-intensity combat. So negotiations might allow Israel to do the latter rather than the former, and that would ease the suffering and ease the humanitarian catastrophe that resulted in the Gaza Strip from a full-scale military onslaught. But that seems to be Israel's top choice right now, is to go in heavy-handed with everything they have.
That was Craig Albert, professor of political science and graduate director, Master of Arts in Intelligence and Security Studies at Augusta University in Augusta, Georgia. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis.
There are no words to describe our pain, heartache, grief, sorrow, and shock. Pray for Judith. Pray for Natalie. Pray for all our brothers and sisters in Israel.
That's Yehudit Heck, friend of Judith Ronan, describing the emotional pain of family members and friends of Ronan and her teenage daughter who were kidnapped by Hamas. Nitzana Darshan Leitner, an Israeli attorney, human rights activist, and the founder and president of Sherat Hadin Israeli Law Center, spoke with me from Tel Aviv about the present situation of the hostages and the reality of what happens to people who are kidnapped by terrorist organizations.
Well, right now, there are no signs of negotiation being dealt between Israel or any other factor, at least not that we know of. We know that there are some third-party countries like Germany that offer to get involved, and perhaps they are in some contacts with some other organizations or states, but Israel publicly is not involved with any negotiation. Right now, the demand from Hamas is to release the hostages immediately with no delay. You're talking about civilians that are being captured by a terror organization, women, children, men. They are not soldiers. They are not prisoners of war. They are civilians that were taken hostage against the international law, and there should not be any negotiation, just a complete release of the hostages back home.
Also, Israel's military said that videos published by Hamas are portraying themselves as being humane to the hostages. With your experience, what do you actually think is going on with the hostages?
Look, we don't know anything what's going on with the hostages. We have no information. Hamas doesn't release information because they just want to inflict more pain and suffering on the families and the public in Israel. The Red Cross that's supposed to go and check when there are hostages, when there are prisoners of war, when there are people on the other side being captured by the hands of the enemy, does not go and get any information, does not fulfill its duty. We know it's doing it very, very carefully about the Hamas terrorists held by the hands of Israel, but he does not bother or have no intention to go and do the same to the hostages in the other side. And the release of a video of one girl saying fearfully that she's okay and she's being treated well does not give any indication to the other 200 hostages being held by Hamas. So unfortunately, we don't have any information whatsoever.
In your experience in working with victims and family members of victims, what state of mind are they in, and how are they reacclimated back into society once they are free?
I can tell you a story that one of the families that were told that after many, many days of looking for their child, girl, a teenager, the military forces came to the father and told him that they found the body of the girl. The father said, thank God she's dead. I wouldn't like her to be kept hostage by Hamas. Showing you that nobody is jealous at these young people captured by Hamas. Hamas is a terror organization, is a cruel terror organization. What they did to the civilians during this massacre, during this horrific attack, when they cut their bodies, they beheaded their heads, they tore their eyes out of their faces, they burned them alive. You can just imagine what they can do to the hostages when they raped women. One of them were under investigation, admitted that the purpose of kidnapping these women is to dirty them. And when the interrogator kept asking him, what do you mean by dirty them? He said, you know, dirty them, you know. And in the end, he said, just to rape them, to make them dirty. We're talking about savage. We're talking about non-human that are holding pure, innocent children, women, teenagers, babies, elderly, that have done nothing to them, nothing. They took them out of their beds. They took them out of a rock, of a festival. They took them out of davening, of just being, living for just being Jewish. Everybody in Israel are very, very scared for the life of the hostages. We don't trust Hamas. We don't trust anything they say. And there is a demand that they just should be released immediately. We know from Gilad Shalit, a soldier who was captive by the hands of Hamas for 5 years. When he came back, he was not the same, completely not the same. And here you're talking about really young souls that if, and God willing, if they will come back alive, they will carry this nightmare for the rest of their life.
Netzana Darshan-Leitner, an Israeli attorney, human rights activist, and the founder and president of Sherat Hadin Israeli Law Center in Tel Aviv.
Today is the 12th day of the escalation. We are in very difficult situation. It's catastrophic. It's terrible and horrible. No words can describe it.
Dr. Mohammed Kandil, emergency director of the Nasser Hospital in Gaza, describes the horrific situation doctors are working in to treat trauma patients. For more on the physical, mental, and emotional stress of treating patients in a war zone, I spoke with Dr. Mohammed Zayer Zalul, a humanitarian and critical care specialist at Advocate Christ Medical Center and St. Anthony's Hospital, and associate professor in clinical medicine at the University of Illinois in Chicago.
The issue here is that not only medical supplies, and I've been in disaster regions before, in Syria during the siege in Aleppo, and in Ukraine recently, and Yemen, and in Gaza 4 times before. But this is the worst that I've seen. Using the term overwhelmed is an understatement. Doctors and nurses are doing surgeries now on victims of bombings without anesthesia. They don't have enough medications to treat the pain. They don't have enough IV fluid to give the victims who are bleeding. They don't have enough blood products. They don't have enough suture kits and surgical kits. They don't have enough drains. They don't have anything that is needed to operate a hospital that is overwhelmed by victims of bombings. Most of the victims, unfortunately, are women and children. On top of that, they don't have electricity in some of the hospitals that ran out of fuel. So you cannot operate an ICU, ventilators, incubators, elevators in the hospital without electricity. On top of that, they don't have enough food to take themselves or to their families or to their patients. No clean water in Gaza. And all of this will add to the mental health trauma that is affecting not only the victims of trauma and bombing, but also the doctors and the nurses who are treating them. There's no place safe in Gaza, as we have seen yesterday with the bombing of Al Ahli Hospital. So even hospitals are not a safe place. And that adds to the stress and anguish of doctors and nurses in Gaza.
Yes, that's a very good point. The mental health and the emotional state of the medical personnel, which brings me to my next question. How long would someone in this type of traumatic situation be able to perform
People are running on adrenaline. Doctors and nurses are running on adrenaline. It has been relentless since October 7th in Gaza. And because of the sheer number of victims and the fact that everyone needs your attention and you cannot take a break as a doctor, we have already shortage of doctors and nurses in Gaza before this war. With very limited resources, people are just want to work and help their communities. But at one point, there will be a breaking point. So we've seen it here in the United States during the COVID pandemic, where in my hospital in Chicago, half of the nurses quit after the first few months because of the large number of sick patients and the fact that we did not have at that time many things to give to our patients besides supportive care. So you can imagine the situation in Gaza, which is 1,000 times worse than the COVID pandemic. So some of the doctors and nurses, unfortunately, will have PTSD or will just quit, or some of them will commit suicide, as we've seen in other places going through disaster. And many of them will have scars of trauma throughout the rest of their lives.
Yes, I certainly can imagine that. And at this point, it doesn't look like they're going to get any additional resources in.
Unfortunately, not yet. I mean, the talk about humanitarian corridor from Egypt is still there. Today's President Biden's announcement that they will provide the humanitarian aid to the victims in Gaza and that they will facilitate opening humanitarian corridor. This is a good sign. But so far, we have not seen it. It's going to take a lot of effort and organizations and coordinations to make sure that medical supplies, food, clean water, and diesel fuel is reaching to the people who are in need. The evacuation of 1.1 million people is not an easy thing and making complicating things. This is, according to the WHO, it's a sentence of death, especially for critically ill patients. There's not enough beds in southern Gaza to accommodate the patients who are very ill in northern Gaza.
That was Dr. Mohammed Zahir Salul, a humanitarian and critical care specialist at Advocate Christ Medical Center and St. Anthony's Hospital and associate professor in clinical medicine at the University of Illinois in Chicago. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, has confirmed the deaths of 9 journalists so far in the line of duty since the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel. Guilherme Canella is head of journalist safety and freedom of expression at UNESCO. He spoke with me about what his organization is doing to help ensure the safety of journalists when covering wars and conflicts. So far, UNESCO has confirmed the deaths of 9 journalists in the line of duty since the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel. So it takes a special kind of person to put their life on the line. What are your reports telling your organization about the possibility of further loss of journalists' lives during this war in Israel?
Thank you for the question. First, of course, we would like to underline that our thoughts are with the victims and their families in this very tragic moment, and all sympathies of UNESCO to what's happening with these journalists and, again, their families. You are right on your question. We have condemned so far 9 killings. We are monitoring several other cases that are still unclear if these journalists that lost their lives or are still missing, they were killed in the line of duty. So indeed, and unfortunately, these numbers, they might grow in the coming days. Aside that, the lessons learned for UNESCO in observing other conflicts in the past, including in other areas of the world, is that the coverage of conflicts, it's a very, very complex matter for you journalists. And particularly when certain conditions of protection and safety, including equipment, but also adequate training, etc., they are not available, then unfortunately the likelihood of not only killings, but other sorts of violence against journalists covering these sort of situations or special circumstances is, unfortunately, the likelihood is high. So we can't predict the future. We hope we won't have more violence against journalists, but the lessons learned, unfortunately, point to a different direction.
That was Guilherme Canella, head of Journalist Safety and Freedom of Expression at UNESCO. That's all the time we have this week. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for listening. For more news throughout the week, listen to International Edition Monday through Friday or visit us anytime at voanews.com. Join us next week for more issues in the news. Until then, I'm Kim Lewis.